So I'm going to talk a little bit about the work that I do with schools and the work that I do with young people and by accident with schools. Working with schools is not something that I intended to do, nor really was working with children, but the working with children was artistically interesting. And then there was the question of where the hell am I going to get children, right? Where am I going to find children? Children are not everywhere. In our culture, at least in the Canadian society, and I'm sure very similar here, there aren't too many places to find children. There's the family, there's the school, and then there's sort of a few extracurricular activities. But beyond that, having any kinds of creative relationship with children is very difficult, and you need these institutions to be able to access children. And so that's how I ended up working with schools. Schools, and the good thing about schools, and the reason why it is important that I work with schools is because through schools, that's the easiest way to access the widest and most sort of diverse sampling of young people, working with children in other contexts, working with children who are involved in cultural production already. Those children tend not to be so diverse. It's a more homogenous group. So I'm looking to work with diverse groups of young people. I'm looking in particular to culturally and to culturally diversify the cultural industries themselves. That's one of my objectives that evolved out of this work, and I'll talk a bit about that. So schools is a place to start, but I've found it's not a place to continue because of the various challenges that I have with schools. My parents were both teachers. I love teachers. If there's any, how many teachers here? By any chance, one teacher? Just one? Two? Okay. So I love teachers, but my parents are teachers. I respect teachers. But the fact is that we have two very different jobs and we have two very different objectives. And those objectives sometimes do not mix well together. So the first part of my talk is drawn from one article in this 2010 publication written by Winifred Kneipp, who's he runs the Mercator Stiftung in Essen, and he has funded a lot of the work, or the Stiftung has funded a lot of the work that we've done. And so some of his insights are very useful, and you can find them in this publication. I can send you the PDF if you like, if you give me your email address. He claims that the culture of artists has not been able to influence the core of education as determined by the major subjects such as language, learning, math, and science. Artists have not done a good job of penetrating those subjects and of helping the curricular communication of those subjects. Artists do a lot of other great stuff, but communicating the curriculum, he found in a series of three symposiums, one with students who are children, one with artists, and one with teachers, over the course of 3 years, this is one of the findings that came out of his research. He claims that art may be effective in the core area of education if we succeed in defining what he calls a curriculum of the imponderable. So things that cannot be pondered, things that are outside of our thinking process, outside of the rational thinking. So he's looking for a third space where art and school can meet. I'm looking for that too. It's a challenging space to find. But the good news is there are very few topics and few artistic processes which are not accessible to children. I've taken hundreds of children to see the shows at the Rutrienel, to see the shows at the Lift Festival in London, to see many shows in festivals around the world as part of a project that I will discuss. And the children, we have a very similar taste. We appreciate the same things, and they love a good Rimini Protocol show just like anybody. And they know good work, and they know bad work, and they know it deep within their cells. Now, these are very important things that I think that I drew from his article, and I'll go through each one of them. Both teachers and artists need to be seen as experts, but experts of different things. Artists are experts at the making of art. Teachers are experts at the communicating and the translating of a curriculum. Those are two very important skills, but they're not possessed together in one person. These are two skills that both have, but they're both experts. That's the most important part. Is they're both very good at what they do, but they do very different thing. Teachers, and this is very important, that I've had, this is one of the problems that I've had over and over again, is that teachers tend to be excluded from the artistic activities. The artist comes into a school, they are working with the teachers there, they are just concerned with creating activities for the students. Then the teachers get excluded, they don't feel very good about themselves, they get a little grumpy, and then we have conflict. So it's very important to include the teachers in the artistic activities. And these are all Kneipp's findings, and these are findings that I agree with. Artistic activities should not be pushed outside of the classroom. It's very difficult to get classroom time. As an artist working school after school after school, I'm working in a school in Milan right now. I'm working in Manchester, in the Lowry right now, in a venue, and working with kids there. We've got two projects happening at once, and we don't get any class time because the class time is very precious. It's geared toward a curriculum. It's geared toward these testable outcomes, and we're pushed outside. But that's he feels, and I agree that it's important that not be the case. We also have to acknowledge that artists contribute value that learning that might not be valued by the school. The school doesn't value what we bring. Often they think it's ridiculous. In my case, they think that we're just goofing around. And so it's important that we figure out what it is, and that is well communicated, what it is we're bringing as artists. But there is also an onus on the artist to think of their work in terms of some kind of learning. However that's conceived, some kind of learning needs to be happening if we're going to be collaborating together. Often, in my experience, I've worked with artists who are in the presence of a teacher who will mock the education system as though it is this antiquated, stupid place that creates just, you know, drone-like thinking. I've seen artists make fun of the education system in front of teachers without understanding that that could be offensive, which is quite surprising, but there is such arrogance amongst artists about the education system. And I think that artists need to understand that is not going to go. That's not going to work. So what we need is help from experts in the pedagogy of arts and education. And people who are experts in the pedagogy of arts and education are rare people. They're hard to find. They're hard to find good ones. The reason why I think this is, and one of the big problems that we have, is that artists who collaborate with schools are often considered to be failures. It's understood that you have, and many artists that I work with have their real practice that is central to their practice, and then they have the stuff that they do with the kids at the school. And these are two very different, they're positioned in their minds in two very different ways. And I think that it's important as an artist to understand that the work that you're doing needs to be of the highest aesthetic quality, the same aesthetic quality you would bring if you were making a work with adults for an adult audience. Working with kids needs to be taken as seriously and needs to be regarded, artists in this field need to be regarded as, oh, they didn't succeed at their career, so here they are over here where there's easy money to be made. Well, it's not particularly easy, as anybody knows who works in education. Working with kids is very, very difficult. And the rewards sometimes are not so great. So these are the main points the main conclusions that Kneipp came to through his research, and these are the ones that I pulled from his article that I think are the most valuable. The other thing that is very common with the work that I do is that it is seen to be, everybody looks at it in terms of the effect the effect on the children. How are we improving the children, right? What skills are they learning? What things are they learning? Always in those terms. And for me, the important thing in my practice is when I'm working with kids, it's not the children whose learning is primary in my mind. It's the institutions that I'm working with these kids within, they are the subject of the intervention. So the Rotrainel, I say that badly, it's Rotrainel, it's a very difficult word. So the Rotrainel, that's the subject of the intervention. These guys, I wanted to have a good time with them and improve their lives, and we did a lot of things together and we continue to work together, but it was the Rotrainel and the artists in the Rotrainel, those are the people that I wanted to have a shift in their knowledge, and I wanted them to understand young people. Young people understand young people, and it was these organizations, and we had some interesting times. We can talk about Anna Teresa de Karasmacher, of course. We will speak about her because we were banned from her show. The red carpet was banned from her show. We'll get into that. But we have very interesting conflicts, not only with teachers, but with these institutions, and we're constantly fighting. And to me, the negotiation with the institution that happens before we bring our projects, that is, to me, that is where the brilliant and hilarious work happens. The very difficult negotiations with the artists who are in these festivals. We are making an intervention. They don't want us around. They don't want us to mess up their beautiful shows. And we're very keen on messing up their beautiful shows. So in my practice, I consider children to be material. It's a socially engaged practice. It's informed by relational aesthetics and other movements. And so children are a material that I'm using. I am a material also in my practice that I'm using, my presence as material, but social relations as material. And these guys are the paint that I've been collaborating with. And they're beautiful paint and they're very great paint. And they'll talk about their work as material and the effects that they've had on people. And they'll have some effects on you if all goes well. So now I'll just talk about a few of the projects and a few of the conflicts. And then I will sort of conclude with discussing the model of youth engagement that I've come up with in collaboration with young people, primarily in Toronto. Was the first site. I've been working with the same young group of young people since 2006, and now they are in their early 20s. Two of them are in Milan now leading a project, and two of them are in Manchester leading a project. Four will come from the Ruhr to London to work with kids. Pascal's coming to London, Iska next time maybe. But there's three other young people who are also coming. We've got this youth engagement model that I will also share and conclude with the model and discuss the work we've been doing in the Ruhr. So Haircuts by Children was the very first project that I made with young people. It was supposed to be a one-off project. I didn't think working with children, I'd never considered that before, but it was not only so much fun, but what happened was, that was very interesting, was the way the project works is we train these kids to cut hair. Then we rent a salon and we pay them to work in a salon, and then they cut hair in a salon. And they have a really good time, but the most interesting part was the intimacy that developed between a client and their stylist. It was a very strange social space. Where there was an attempt to reach across an intergenerational divide to deal with a very uncomfortable moment where an adult was terrified that they were going to look like an idiot, and sometimes, you know, it doesn't, you know, it's quite a beautiful one. And so the adult is very afraid, the child is very afraid, they want to do a good job, and they both made great efforts to reach across this divide. And I've seen it again and again, the fear in the salon that then gets slowly washed away by beautiful communication between these. There's another angle on that one. Beautiful. I mean, like, you can't, you know, it's gorgeous hair. These are works of art, I want to point out. It's not just an ordinary haircut. So it was this other way of being together that was the most interesting thing to me. The funny haircuts were a side note, and were the excuse. But really, what was the most exciting was the connection between these and this new social space in this salon, these kids running the salon. It was kind of like being at a holiday dinner with all your cousins and their children, or, you know, it was a big family and kids are running around, and it's feeling very free. So the projects, then we made a series of projects working in collaboration with a school called Parkdale Public School in Toronto. And we did a series of projects that now many of them tour on the road. And it was from this school that I worked with these kids. My relationship with the school was destroyed by a journalist who was very keen on bringing to the school's attention the fact that previous to this work with kids, I had a very, very adult theatrical career. I was on naked on stage many times. My penis was a character in many of my works, or in two of my works. There's one show where I'm standing on stage and the light slowly comes up just to reveal my penis, and I make this long poem as the audience is forced to stare at this ridiculous object, and it's very complicated, but I was making work like that, and the books that I've written are very adult content, and it seems to be that's okay, right? It's okay. It was for an adult audience. We made this work. I was an experimental theater artist. Then this is one of the experiments of my theater career that was the most interesting, and I wanted to continue to work with kids, but this journalist was more interested, and so this was a sort of the first fight with the school. The school was a little bit horrified. Nobody confronted me with this, but I heard rumors. I had a friend who was working at the school. They thought that I was a very, very strange person. And it seems that people who create adult-oriented work should also be working with young people. It seems not such a problem. Canada's very puritanical. I think it wouldn't be such a problem here. Canada's very puritanical. Maybe, yeah. So I haven't done that work since. I work with kids now and only work with kids, and I make sure that I don't do that because I don't want to confuse everybody. However, my company has another project called All the Sex I've Ever Had, and we work with seniors. So we work with people over the age of 65, and we interview each of them for 4 hours, and we go through every single year of their life, and we ask them about all the sex they've ever had. Then we put them on stage, and they literally go year by year in their life, and they share this script. So we have a 24 hours of audio that we turn into a 90-minute script. The seniors themselves, they go up on stage, and they go, 1939, they're born. 1942, and they talk about holding a boy's hand. 1965, they talk about the sexual revolution. 1999, they talk about taking Viagra. 2010, they talk about being on Tinder. So it's a beautiful show. These are seniors that are from the community. I've done this all over the world. But we have problems with this. We have problems where I've been invited to speak at a school, and the head teacher, the principal, went on our website and saw this project, and then I was banned from the school. Because I make this one work, I'm not allowed to make this other work. So there's problems like that. And so what we did was we stopped the relationship with the school, and we created a direct relationship with the young people, and that was done through Facebook. And I'll talk about that in a minute when I get to talking about some problems in the UK. So the Children's Choice Awards is where I met these guys, and it's a very basic project where a jury of young people around 12 years old, and you guys were 12 at the time, yeah? Where we just take these kids to see all the shows. This is at the Kunst and Festival des Arts in Brussels. We've done it at many festivals around the world. There's Iska, little Iska, 12. I think you still look the same, frankly, but that's Sonia. Sonia's changed a lot. But I don't even think that was that. I think that was more recent, maybe. Was that during the Children's Choice? Do you remember? Yeah. Went to a show, yeah. So with this project, again, it's an intervention. Again, we often get into fights. Anna Teresa de Karasmacher, who's a very well-known choreographer, she doesn't like the red carpet in front of her venue. She finds this disgusting or tacky, so that was banned. She didn't let the young people sit together. They must be separate. They can't sit together because they will talk, obviously. We had a problem if you want to bring kids to a show, do not give them clicking pens. You know, the pens that go click, click. Do not do that. It's important. And so with the project, they will go and they, sometimes there are installations, they play in the installations, in the lobby, they play in the lobby, like normal young people playing in the lobby. And we ask that the audience and the festival make space for them, accommodate them, and welcome them. And that involves a lot of negotiation and a lot of challenges. And they meet the artist, that's the opera director Robert Wilson, who they spend some time. They have special Q&As with the audiences, or with the artists. And we have an award ceremony where the microphone is only comfortable for the children. It's not comfortable for the adults. And there's performances that happen and the funny things that they did during the festival, the small things that are not really performances but are curious things that young people do. We shape them into performances and present them. So this is a very simple project, but it involves a lot of negotiation, as you can imagine, around bringing these kids to see adult artistic content. And our concern is, I mean, my personal concern is intense sexuality. You know, that's an issue, I understand, and violence. For me, violence is probably more of a concern, but I understand sexuality too. We're working often with communities that are not part of the mainstream cultural community. So we worked with Molenbeek, which is the predominantly Moroccan community in Brussels. So it's a negotiation. It's a negotiation with the school, with the parents. And we've had some interesting and difficult times, but we've also had some very rewarding times. In Kyoto, we did this at the Kyoto Experiment, which is another major festival, and there was simulated homosexual sex. Two men got naked and simulated sex. And so what we did was the school was great. They discussed it with the parents, and the parents who were comfortable with it, they said yes to it. The condition on the child attending was that the parent come, so the parent could debrief the experience of seeing this. So, I mean, that was a very strange experience for my team, being at a show, simulated sex with children and their parents, and then everybody discussing this at the end. But it was, I think, a very, from what I understood, I wasn't there, but a healthy and positive experience for the young people. But very often, we are banned from a show because of an F word, and that ban will come from the head teacher of a school. That happened in London. At the London International Festival of Theatre, we had 25 shows in the festival, and in the end, we were only permitted to see five. So we're a jury of 40 kids, we see five shows, and then the deal is that every kid must give an award. That's how the show works. Every kid gives out an award. So at the award ceremony, there's five shows, 40 kids. So it was very funny. Like, it was a comment on the project that the children kept giving the same awards over and over again to the five shows, same five shows over and over again. It sort of pointed out how ridiculous this whole situation was. But really, it could be just an F word that triggers the head teacher. But the head teachers are admittedly, they're in a difficult position because they have to act as if they are the most paranoid parent, the most angry parent. They have to anticipate that. So they're in a very difficult position. Eat the Street is a similar project to the Children's Choice Awards. We take children to as food critics to a bunch of restaurants. They try food that they've never seen before. They play with the food, and they have great conversations with the audience who comes to eat dinner with the children and hang out with them. And it's kind of like a community dinner. And at the end, there's also an award ceremony where the young people are give out awards to their favorite restaurants. With this project, a few of the interesting things, one interesting thing that happened is that one of the head teachers, the principal at the school, he didn't read the brief. That's another problem, is that teachers, head teachers, just like the rest of us, are very busy people, and they don't read their emails either, right? And so he didn't read the fact that there would be other audience members, strangers, having dinner with the children. And on the first dinner, suddenly there was all these people coming in, and he had no idea who these people were. And I explained to him, this is a show, you know, this is a piece of art that's in a theater festival. That's what's going on here. And he didn't understand what I was talking about. The biggest problem was the alcohol. It was drinking alcohol in near children. This made him very, very uncomfortable, as if somehow, I don't know what could possibly happen with a beer and a child. In this sense, I do think that Germans are much more sophisticated than than Canadians and British people, who are very paranoid about this sort of thing. So in response to these various conflicts with teachers and schools and fights that I've had, I wrote something called the Mammalian Protocol for Collaborating with Children, which is derived from the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child, where I took the key articles from the convention that apply to the work that we're doing, and wrote this protocol, again, that nobody reads. I know just now in Manchester, they're having a meeting today where my team is yelling at the theater team because they didn't read our protocol, and they are freaking out now because of the conditions that we create. And those conditions include things like something simple like respect for the views of the child. That seems like an easy one, but in many of these situations, children and young people aren't allowed to talk about certain topics. Our rule in the convention is that unless there is somebody being hurt, unless one of the kids is hurting another kid, unless there's an act of aggression, a verbal aggression, or a physical aggression, they can say whatever the hell they want. And we will defend their right to talk about sexuality, as is in some of our projects. And so we've And there's this one, the right to freedom of expression. That one's interesting because that we have a no shushing rule where you cannot shush the children. The onus is on you to be so interesting that they don't want to talk to each other. That's your problem. And so the same goes with separating young people. You can't separate them. That's against their right to freedom of association. You can't break them apart. You have to be so interesting that they pay attention to you. That's your problem. And what I found is that all you have to do is, rather than saying shush, you just say, hey, it's very distracting. It's very hard for me to do this while you guys are talking. And that's all you have to say. You don't even have to say, so can you please be quiet? You just have to say, man, it is so hard for me to do this while you guys are chatting. And then they be quiet. They respect. That's what seems to be at least the most effective thing, and very little pushback against that in my experience. I mean, it's not perfect, and we have another protocol that's sort of a joke protocol that we use, and we tell people when we're going into this other protocol, which is a protocol that allows me to yell at people and tell them to shut up. But we're very clear on when we're in the Mammalian Protocol or when we're in the Hamilton Protocol. And the Hamilton Protocol is from the city of Hamilton in Canada, where a youth arts group was always yelling at their kids. So now we have these two protocols. We very rarely use the Hamilton. We're always using the Mammalian. And I think for our discussion here, the aims of education are really important to understand in terms of the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child, which, by the way, has been ratified by Germany. It's been ratified by every country but the US. So the aims of the education, I think it's important to note that the convention, this international treaty, it does not detail the tools of learning, such as literacy, numeracy, factual knowledge. Those are not the aims of education, according to the UN Convention. The aims of education are actually to provide the child with life skills, to strengthen the child's capacity to enjoy the full range of human rights, and to promote a culture which is infused by appropriate human rights values. Those are the aims. So our goal is to empower the child by developing whatever skills they want. If they want literacy, numeracy, that's great. We're there for that. But it's their capacities for human dignity, self-esteem, self-confidence. Those are the aims of education according to the UN, not these other. So when people have these expectations that we're conveying somehow cultural knowledge, so they see an opera and they become better people, or they learn how to use a knife and a fork in a more sophisticated way, that's not what we're doing, though there's many assumptions that we are doing that. No, very much so, we are trying to create a situation where there is a different social contract, where the young people have more power. So now I'll just conclude with the secession model of youth labor engagement. And this is a model of working with young people that I developed with the kids in Toronto, and that's a bunch of them there. So the one who's jumping, the Asian girl who's jumping, that's Kathy Vu. She's now in Manchester leading a project. Beside her is Dana. Dana's on our board of directors. She's an HR person. She just finished a degree in criminology. Beside her is Isabel. This one here.
That's Isabel.
Isabel is now in Amsterdam leading night walks with teenagers. Virginia, who's on the other side of Kathy, she's in Milan right now running a project called Teen Talitarianism. Up in the back is Narupa. Narupa is working, she's in the Philippines doing research for a project that we're doing about Filipino migrant workers. Sanjay, who's the guy who's the highest there, he's in Milan, he's leading a project in Milan. And yeah, that's everybody who's on the road and working right now. So we've been working with these kids since they were maybe about 10 years old, some of them a little bit older, and we've been working with them constantly, and we developed this this approach that I'll sort of break down. And they are the young mammals. We also have these guys, Mitona Alice, who we've been working with in the Ruhr since 2012, and then there's another group of kids in London that we're working with for 5 years at the London International Festival of Theatre. So, and all of these guys are now intermingling and working on each other's work, and they're visiting each other. And so, like I said, Pascal is coming to London to work with some of the young mammals from Toronto and some of the uplifters. And so everybody's sort of cross-pollinating and doing kind of a cascading mentorship where I mentor the Toronto kids, the Toronto kids mentor the German kids mentor the London kids, and it's each, they're all a little bit, each one is a little bit younger. So secession is the main idea, which is that our orientation to these young people is that we are training them to take over our organization, our jobs, and not in some abstract way. The desire is for, I want to give these kids the company. That as an artistic move, that as this idea of, there's this neighborhood in Toronto with these kids, as you can see here, they're all the children of relatively recent immigrants. None of them are white. I mean, Virginia looks a little white, but she's Indian and Russian. So they all have these mixed identities or fully of color identities, and that's important part of the model. So the idea is that I want to give the company to them as an artistic move, and see, is this possible? The president of the board is also this kid I've known since he was 12, named Ahash. Now he just became the president through a coup, actually, arranged by another board member who's a much older adult in her 40s, who's a university children's studies professor, and they were having difficulties with other members of the board, so the two of them concocted a coup and got rid of these other idiots that we didn't like and installed this kid that I've known since he was 12. It was so funny. They did it. They didn't even ask me. I didn't know what was going on. I was just fighting with these board members. So we want them to have the company, and we're building that. And so there's a cascading bunch of things that follow. Collegiality is the next idea. So we want to give this to them. Therefore, they are our colleagues, and we must treat them like colleagues. They're not just some kids that we're working with off in the youth program over there. They are central to what we're doing. We make the money that we make, the projects that we tour, other than that one project I mentioned with aging and sexuality, all the sex I've ever had, they're all youth-oriented projects. So it's true. Like, they're central to what the company's doing. So collegiality is important. Division of labor is also really important, wherein the young people are more responsible for creating the content through their own interests and their own activities. We try to keep an eye on them at all times and see what they're interested in, but it's the adults who then are responsible for the form. We know, for example, that a urinal can, if you put a urinal in a gallery and you sign it with R. Mutt, you change the course of art history. That's, we as adults know that. Young people, they don't know art history in the same way that we do. So there is a division of labor where we bring the form, they bring the content, and we as the formal people responsible for the form, we keep an eye on what they're up to and then identify their own impulses as artistic if framed correctly, if tweaked correctly. So, and I'll talk about that in terms of the projects that we've done. social capital and the sharing of our social capital as cultural makers who are very well networked, as soon as I could, I started dragging these guys and these guys to things like this and to parties, to New Year's Eve's parties at my colleagues' homes or to parties at my house, making sure that they were as plugged into my network as any other adult colleague, and making sure that there are lots of eyes on this. There are lots of there's high accountability because there's a lot of people there. There's my parties in my apartment, there were teenagers there, but there were all my adult friends, and there was high accountability. And bringing these guys, with Katrin even, counting that too, like how many talks and things have you guys done over the years? A lot. Yeah, many. And you've hung around with Johann Siemens and Heine Goebbels, and yeah, so these guys consider as their professional colleagues, even at age 14, some highfalutin cultural workers. And then, of course, what follows from that is, in our industry, we're friends for the most part. It's often our colleagues are our friends. Whoops, our colleagues are our friends. And so the idea of friendship is also very important. You work with your friends, and this is where we get into difficulties with the institutions in the UK. They do not want us to be friends with them on Facebook, for example. And that's core to how we did the organizing in Toronto. We couldn't have done what we did without Facebook. And we just make sure, and now we have Snapchat groups, and we make sure, again, high accountability. There's many adults in the same groups, so the discussions are monitored by each other to make sure that if anybody's tempted to whatever, send a photograph of some naked bit, that doesn't happen, because we're all watching very carefully, and we've never had a problem. So this is the book that I've just recently published, and I'm happy to share a PDF of it. If you would like to give me your email address, I can give you a PDF, or you can get it from Andrea or however. Yeah, we can sort of sort that out if you want that. And this outlines how we put this together and why I think more generally why it's important, even in a different, this context is about schools and teaching, but I think in general, the presence of young people can sort of offer us a way through thinking certain political deadlocks that we're in right now. I think a higher presence of children are very much interested in equity. They're very much interested in fairness. They are natural socialists. They demand fairness. They demand an equal distribution of whatever, hamburgers, candy, schnitzel. And so their presence as equals, as participating in making the decisions that are important in the world, is what I argue here could help us through the sort of odd political deadlock that I think we're in right now.